AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Everyone's got those songs that make them go, "Oh man, I felt that." Songs that resonate with their own individual circumstances and bring them together with others through shared connection. But the same song is guaranteed to speak to different people in vastly different ways. So join Dayton and I, once childhood friends in Marathon City, Wisconsin, as we talk through the songs that have struck a chord with us. We'll discuss the similar messages we've heard upon our listens, the lessons we've learned through our own interpretations, and the deeper topics we're navigating as our unique journeys continue beyond our hometown. Welcome to Marathon Mixtapes. Dayton, what's the song of the week today?
Al Jordan. This song I have on a playlist called The Greatest of All Time with three question marks after it. I love this song. This is by one of my favorite artists, Brandon Flowers of The Killers. This is track 5 from his 2015 album, The Desired Effect. The song's called Between Me and You. Now, Brandon Flowers is best known, as I mentioned, as the frontman of The Killers, and his sound here, as is across his whole album, is pretty similar to what he accomplishes with The Killers, with all the sort of hallmarks of a moody, kind of vulnerable synth ballad. This solo work is not as well known. I'd really, really like to share it here today, and I really hope that you had a good time listening to it in preparation for this episode. It's covering similar themes, in addition to having a similar sound as Brandon does in his work with The Killers, kind of these ideas of American working life, and there's even some notes of Christian-adjacent spirituality just discussed here. And this song specifically tackles kind of the old-fashioned pressures of being a working man, especially as it relates to supporting a household. But the way I interpret the song, while I do see a little bit of that element of it, it also broadly taps into this idea of searching for an independent purpose or a purpose with somebody. I'd really be curious to see how you took to the song, because I don't think you had heard this one before I had shared it with you, did you?
No, yeah. So I remember asking you when we first discussed kind of the songs we put on our list of songs to discuss, and I was like, who's Brandon Flowers? And you're like, oh yeah, he's the lead singer of The Killers. And The Killers is a band that I'm quite somewhat acutely aware of. I think The Killers as a group had a big part in my teenage years, mainly because my brother listened to a lot of The Killers when he was a teenager. And I kind of inherited a lot of his CDs and stuff when I got his car as a hand-me-down. And so I listened to a lot of Killers, and a lot of their songs made it to my like iPod and stuff like that. I listened to a lot of The Killers, but I didn't know Brandon Flowers had a lot of solo stuff. And when I first listened to the song, like, I could definitely tell, like, oh yeah, it's got the same vibe in that it's the same singer, I guess. But even though, like, just from this one song, I feel like it does feel a little more mellow than The Killers, probably because, like, it's not a whole like band. It's kind of just him. And the music seems more of like not an afterthought, but like not the primary thing when you have like solo artists as opposed to like full bands.
Yeah. I think probably when Brandon Flowers approached this song, he probably felt a certain amount of freedom from what he typically does with The Killers, especially now The Killers are sort of known as this big arena rock band. They just played in Milwaukee, mm-hmm. actually, at time of recording, at Summerfest. And I've seen them live twice. I didn't see them this past week here, as much as I would have loved to. But they always put on a big bombastic show, you know, pyro lights, big, huge choruses with a lot of their music, especially with some of their more recent albums, say for Pressure Machine, which is a little bit more of a stripped down Americana kind of a tribute to Bruce Springsteen, the Nebraska kind of sound, you know, very personal kind of storytelling focused. And I feel like we see a little bit more of that here with Brandon's solo work. As I mentioned up top, this song he's expressed in interviews is about that kind of pressure that the typical American working man might feel. I think that's kind of interesting. There's plenty of songs out there like that, but there's a certain sensitivity to this one that has always struck a chord with me. No pun intended, or pun intended. Take what you will. But I have always struggled with my relationship with work, so this song has always spoke to me in that way. But structurally, I think what really I enjoy as well is that the song feels like somebody sort of apprehensively starting a conversation with their partner, right? There's like the way that the performance is vocally sort of starting off very calm, the backing vocals are sort of like this childlike distant thing echoing in the background, and suddenly as the character becomes more and more vulnerable, as the narrator becomes more and more vulnerable, the vocals become more confident, the lyrics become more specific. Like, I'm a writer. I like to think I know a thing or two. I usually knock super hard on songs and any kind of writing that isn't sort of, doesn't have specific details. I want specifics. This song starts off pretty vague and has some broad platitudes throughout.
Sure.
But I feel like it's very purposeful. It's like this character getting more and more comfortable with revealing that they don't have it all together, that they're a little bit more worried about the things that they can't control. And one of the big lines in the song is there's a power in letting go. I think it really feels like this character is realizing in that for the first time. And that's what I love about the whole song and how it comes together.
Yeah, musically, I like how when you said it feels like a conversation, it really does feel like that in addition to being a song. The way he sings, especially I feel like, if I'm remembering correctly, towards the later and the second half of the song where he brings in those specifics, it feels like the singing's cadence doesn't quite match up with like the melody, so it does feel more like spoken word than singing a song at points, which to me, I think, lays on that like having a conversation vibe to me. And I actually do really like those broad strokes you were talking about in the beginning half of the song, because I feel like those broad strokes really appeal to everybody, because it's broad enough that the way he sings it and like appeals to the audience, I think anyone can really like find something in their lives that really resonates with the lyrics that he sings. I mean, just like the second line where it just says, I've been thinking about the future. Like, that's a very generic line, but the way he sings it has that emotional appeal. And I think I'm sure the people that like this song, when they hear it, it instantly like makes them think about the future and, or think about how they've thought about the future in the past and things like that.
And I think the title alone does a lot of heavy lifting too.
Mm-hmm.
Not only does it sort of take on two meanings within the song, but it sets that context right away. There's another thing with songs that I usually have a beef with. If the title of the song is the first line, usually I'm like, oh, okay, fine. All right, you're just...
They said it. They said that roll credits.
Yeah, exactly. They said the title of the thing. I've gotten what I came for. No, the title here works as a contextualizing tool. You know, it's this character being like, hey, between me and you, like, it's this... You learn a lot about this narrator very, very quickly, where they're like, mm-hmm. oh, I want to keep this private. I'm admitting something to you. I'm being vulnerable here. I might even be a little ashamed of something here. And it's setting up this delicate conversation that is the song. And so when they go on to say that next line, I've been thinking about the future. You're like, oh, okay, what's this person setting up here? And it could be a number of things. And so I totally agree with what you're saying there. It's everybody can think about those moments where they're like, I have to have a tough conversation with somebody about how I've been feeling. I have to admit some things. I have to feel weak for a moment to really get some idea out, to let this person into my brain and help them help me, kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. So I was just going to ask, like, before we get real deep into it, I'm curious about, like, how I'm sure, like, with all the reasons you've said so far, but is there anything else specifically that, like, really puts this in your playlist of best songs ever?
There's a lot. There are quite a few lines that really just stick with me. Lyrically, I think this song is just my mind sometimes. It's the kind of thoughts that run through my head. Like I mentioned, I've struggled with my relationship with work, and we can get into that in a little bit here. But there are three key lines that I want to talk about. And I think they're really interesting because they challenge me to reframe my thinking, even though this character is going through the same thing, hypothetically, as I am. The first one, and all my life I've been told, follow your dreams, but the trail went cold.
Yeah, I really like that line too.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely felt that way, where, especially our generation, I feel like we've been promised certain things, said, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Well, that's nonsense.
Yeah. It's the very much the American dream, right? Where it's like you can be anything you want. And then I feel like that line really just hits you with, like, how a lot of people, like, will just run into a wall eventually, that they can try all they want, but sometimes, you know, the cards don't fall the way they were hoping, even when they work so hard. And sometimes that's just life, and it sucks. It really does. And I think we've all been there, where we have, like, a goal, or we have not necessarily a goal, but something we think that, like, you know, if I keep following this path, I should get to a certain destination. And then when it, like, suddenly doesn't get there, and you just start wondering why, and that's when you kind of get contemplative, I think. And I think the song does a good job of emulating, I think, that feeling in that, like, short pre-chorus.
Yeah. And the idea that you might lose a sense of what you even want, I think, is really a powerful idea as well. Like, the trail went cold, you were following your heart, and you're like, wait, it just led me somewhere where now suddenly I'm lost and I don't know what direction to go in. So even if you are chasing a dream, you do have a certain want in mind. Mm-hmm. You might find yourself in a place where you still feel directionless. Like, I it's a little subversion there, where so many songs are like, oh, follow your heart and you'll go anywhere and you'll do anything, and some of the things that you were mentioning. But this song says, you follow your heart and you might end up somewhere kind of like a dead end, and that might be scary, and that's okay. Like, I that message has really stuck with me.
The thing I don't like, but I don't think that is, like, okay, because, like, the next lines right after that, like, follow your dreams, but the trail went cold, the heart don't lie, and that's a good luck charm. And I feel like that line is, like, the words he's heard from, like, people around him that are, like, you know, trying to cheer him up, you know, like, oh, it's fine, just, you know, just keep at it, it'll work. And then he immediately, like, retorts back, but I'm watching it tear out of my arms. Like,
there's, oh, that's true. It, yeah.
When I, like, first heard it, I was just like, yeah, man, I feel like I've been there a lot, where you do everything and you have the expectation, but it doesn't come to fruition. And then you kind of feel bummed, and then, like, you try to talk to people about it and, like, be vulnerable. And I've been on, like, the other side of it, and, like, you're like, I'm not sure what to do. I don't want, they're in a moment of low. I don't want to discount their feelings. So I'm just gonna like cheer, like, you know, just keep fighting and keep your head up. You know, heart don't lie. You know, you'll get there. And then the person is just like, it's really not. And like on both sides, you know, I know you're trying to cheer me up, but like I'm watching it like tear out of my arms. I don't know what to do. It's like, it is not going how I wanted it to. And
that is true. Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, you appreciate the sentiment, but like, you know, the words are a little hollow because they don't quite match with what you're seeing and feeling. And then he ends the pre-chorus, you know, I guess I didn't want to let you know. I guess when I was following that train of thought, that line to me was kind of like a confession of like hesitance that like, I don't know if I wanted to even bring this up.
Absolutely.
Just because I knew it was going to go this way anyways. So
yes,
I get it's like, it sucks and I'm telling you and you're just kind of giving me empty words back. And so I, you know, didn't want to let you know because then it just made this awkward situation. And then he gets into the chorus where it kind of just continues that, I think, train of thought for me.
Yeah, I think that line, I guess I really didn't want to let you know, that isn't a line here that I have marked specifically as one that's stuck with me, but I think that really sums up this narrator character really well, where it captures that vulnerability, it captures that hesitance, as you said, to even talk about this at all. I love the idea that the song is almost restricting itself because it's like, it's something that's tough to talk about. It's something that's tough to admit. I think that's a really complex idea to embed into a song, and I feel like it does that with some really appealing lines. It could be, you know, I am sure you could convey that idea with much more complex language, but it does stick to pop friendly language while conveying this idea. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something to be celebrated. Some people, you know, might look at it and be like, oh, these lyrics are a little simple. It's like, but it conveys the idea. I think it's when a pop song can sound like a pop song, but dig into something deeper, that's a different kind of accomplishment than a really elaborate lyrical masterwork doing some real crazy kind of loops and things like that with the language that it's choosing. That's a separate kind of thing. If you keep it simple and still get your idea across, that's a separate kind of trophy and award you get for that in my book.
Sure, yeah. Sometimes simple is best because you can't really hide behind anything else. And so you have like the quality on display.
Absolutely.
And I do like how the chorus ends with, but I'm doing my best not to let it get between me and you. And I think that's like something that I think sticks out to me the most, partly because it's like the ending of the chorus and the chorus is repeated multiple times. But I think I've felt like I've lived like that too, you know, like you kind of compartmentalize things for the sake of relationships and, you know, try not to let stressors and hardships get in the way of like a relationship. And then there's that like conflict, I think, where, or perhaps not conflict, but like conundrum where you don't want to burden your friends, but at the same time, you don't want to hide things from your friends.
Right.
Or, you know, special people. And so, like, what's the best option to go from? Or what's the best option to choose?
Yeah. And it's the other side of the coin of that is the title, too, right? This character started off by saying, hey, between me and you, like, I'm creating this emotional pathway in between you and I. But then they say, oh, I'm doing my best not to let it get between me and you. It's the contradiction of vulnerability, right? It's what you're saying with when you admit something, when you share your problems with somebody, yeah, you're kind of asking them to carry something with you, but at the same time, you're also giving them the gift of vulnerability. It's like, it's a double-edged sword where talking with somebody honestly and sharing how you really feel isn't a simple thing. No. That sounds so silly now that I'm saying it out loud, but I think that's something that people might gloss over, where, you know, honesty is the best.
Yeah, it's definitely a fine line.
Yeah, they say like honesty is the best policy. It's like, okay, well, you don't realize within that policy.
I don't believe right? that.
Even if for somebody who does, you have to tell them, well, that policy has a bunch of fine print to it. It's not a simple, give you the words on the page. There's also little addendums that go with it. And there's things that you're going to have to think about because I'm sharing this with you. Again, this is a pop song that captures a lot of complex emotions in some really fairly straightforward language, and that's why I love it.
It gets repeated too. Yeah. Like, it's not a long song, and a lot of, you know, the chorus repeats, and a lot of the verses are very similar. There's that, like, that fine line of like trying to have that vulnerability and at the same time not let it like get in the way of relationships. And there's the line, I think I'm losing it now, after Between Me and You, mm-hmm. like consistently throughout the song, kind of has that air of not having things in control and panicking a little bit, or like being a little like uneasy.
Right.
Because there's no where. And I think that's when the line of the song, there's a power in letting go, I think really stands out, because then he kind of just like lets his hand off the wheel a little bit, like Jesus take the wheel
and
moment.
And the performance and changes. Just
trusting the process.
Yeah, and the performance changes too, where it's a lot more confident, a lot more exuberant. And it's funny. It's almost like this song doesn't want a trauma dump. I think that's kind of an interesting way to look at it.
But this is a song about trauma dumping.
Yeah. But the character's hesitant too.
But he doesn't want to go too hard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the idea though too, that it's like these lyrics kind of challenge me to reframe some of these ideas, like we've been doing here, honestly. You know, we're thinking about vulnerability in a lot more complex terms than just being open with somebody. But when I go back to that first set of core lyrics that stuck with me, in all my life I've been told, follow your dreams, but the trail went cold. Not mm-hmm. only does that message resonate with me, it makes me think about, well, who's telling us this? Who's telling this narrator this? There's another line that makes me think about these standards, these ideas that so many of us are presented with and where they might come from. And that line is, mm-hmm. these hours I'm working ain't nearly enough. Enough for who? Is this a standard I've created for myself? Mm-hmm. Is this a pressure that, in the context of these two characters, the narrator and the person that they're talking to, their partner, is the partner putting that pressure on them, or is the narrator putting that pressure on themselves? Is the narrator's supervisor, whatever kind of job they're working, are the people in that environment putting the pressure on them? It introduces these, again, because they're a little bit more vague, they leave room for me to investigate, where have I heard this? What standards am I thinking of?
Sure.
The third line I wanted to mention here too, about why this song is an all-timer for me, is I don't feel like I got nothing to show. That's sort of in the bridge area. It's sort of tacked on to the typical rhythm and meter of the song. Again, by what standard? What this person, we know within the context of the song, has a partner. They, during the bridge, they mention marriage. I remember in the garden, seeing you in white. I'm paraphrasing here a little bit. But they have a story. They have, to a certain degree, a sort of typical American life and some parts of the American dream, but there's a lack of satisfaction there. It's
the grind set.
Yeah, and this character is hearing it. We're hearing it. And that's really kind of reassuring to me to a degree. It's like the characters in these stories are hearing the same kind of platitudes that we are and suffering under them in some of the same ways that we are.
Yeah, I actually have little bit of a, I don't know, beef with that. Like, I listened to the song fully, like, through. I was like, man, I think I felt that, like, through those same lines, like, these hours I'm working ain't nearly enough, following my dreams, but just not coming to fruition, watching it tear out of my arms. And then at the end, there's also like, yeah, I f don't feel like I've got nothing to show for this life, and I've been wondering, what am I supposed to do? I think these are questions that I think everybody thinks about. I think it comes up very often in people's lives when you're going through the whole rigmarole of life and it gets tough and you kind of have those doubts, like, what is this all for? And then I like think about how, who's actually like telling me this? It's like a world famous singer who's like probably got a great life.
Right.
And I don't want to discount him completely, but like when I like take a step back, I'm like, oh, like, yeah, it's like a little rich coming from you, Brandon Flowers.
Yeah.
But like, I get it. Like, these are things I think that are just very human in nature, right? And like, I
Yeah.
don't think just because he's successful and famous that he doesn't have these feelings either. In fact, I think maybe it's because he's such a like a skilled artist and musician that he's able to like express those feelings that we all feel in such a way that everyone can agree with. And the reason why, he's a very successful, famous musician. But it just still like kind of has that weird, like, weird aftertaste for me where I understand, and I still like, I love this song now since you've introduced it to me. But it's just a little like funny addendum I have when I think about this song where it's like, the guy who wrote this song, he's doing fine.
Yeah, I won't lie, that it crossed my mind too, because the Killers have countless albums. This was Brandon Flowers' second solo album. I think he's working on a third. He's doing great. He's fine.
Yeah, your Brandon Flowers, keep going. If you ever
Yeah.
if you listen to this, just
Yeah,
nothing but the best for you.
and but I also do sort of want to contextualize it within his larger artistry too, like you've been tapping into here. With you're like, oh, okay, I get the sense that he's kind of speaking on behalf of some people who are probably suffering more. And the Killers album Pressure Machine is all about that. They went back to Brandon Flowers' hometown in sort of rural Nevada near the Black Hills, and they recorded a lot of people just giving interviews about like what was going on in the town and some things that have stuck with people as they've lived there for decades and decades, and kind of the rough and tumble blue collar reality of some of these rural communities. And a lot of the songs on that album are written from the perspective of these people. There's a song that's very explicitly about drug addiction. Brandon Flowers is a devout Mormon, and he hasn't, at least not publicly, expressed any sort of trials and tribulations with that. There's another song on that album
Sure.
about a young man who is coming out as gay in a really religiously conservative community, and how he has these feelings of self-harm. Brandon Flowers is a man who's married to a woman. Like, to me at least, I get the sense that he wants to tell some of these characters' stories who might not have the opportunity to be a big, bombastic front man at the head of one of the
Sure,
biggest rock
yeah.
bands in the world kind of thing. So you're absolutely right to question it. And you're also absolutely right to be like, well, he's probably trying to tell a story at the same time.
No, yeah, and I think like it's kind of one of those things where like not everyone is going to be famous, but those who are, do they have like this innate responsibility because they're under the public eye with much higher scrutiny? And people like listen to them more than like your average Joe Schmo from Alaska. Yeah, I think there's a little bit to that, and I think a lot of the songs, this one included, like that Brandon Flowers and the Killers have done, definitely like I think help, just tell stories of like the experiences that they may not, have the like firsthand experience, but I think it seems like they do a good enough job where they're not getting like kickback from those people, right? And instead they are seeing success. So I think it ends up working out for them. And like with this song, this, like I said before, this I think is a common enough problem. I don't think it's just an issue that, you know, the common folk encounter and go through. This just inherently like a human issue of just running into obstacles and how we deal with that. Do we just like keep trying to bash our head through a wall, or, you know, take a moment to stop and think about, what am I like honestly here to do?
I think this song could very well serve somebody who's suffering from really intense imposter syndrome, that's for sure. I think to a degree this narrator is, but yeah, it's not necessarily that I listen to the song and be like, Brandon's just like me for real. It's more like, okay, he understands this story. He understands that this is, I would argue he would understand that this is an American problem for sure. Obviously it's a huge problem all over the world, but I don't hesitate to say that this is kind of an anti-capitalist song to a degree.
sure. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I think it's like not just an American thing, but American culture definitely feels like it has added pressure in things like this from the lyrics. You know, just, like I said, the American dream where you can be whatever you want to be, you know?
Yep. And
I want to be a coat hanger.
Oh, that's a new one. I haven't heard that.
You know, it's like, I want to be president.
Right. And that.
It's just like an old meme where it's like, I want to be a coat hanger. And the teacher's like, what? And then the kid claps back, like, you said I could be anything. But, you know, like, it's, you know, the high lofty goals. Like, I want to be president. Just like, you know, maybe, but like, not everybody's going to be the president. Like, you only have so many chances to become the president in a single life.
Right.
And there's not enough. Or there's not enough time for everybody at a given moment to eventually become president.
And even there, you introduce something interesting there too, where it's like, not only they give us the freedom to be like, oh yeah, be what you want to be and follow your dreams and you'll get there eventually. But there's such a strong kind of filter there too, where it's like, oh, you have to follow certain things, like you have to want certain things. You, if somebody said, oh, I want to be well, what's the common answer nowadays? Am I dating myself here by saying kids want to say they want to be influencers or YouTubers? Maybe I'm dating myself a little bit by saying that. I don't know if YouTube's still TikTok's in with the youngins. Yeah. Vine, no. If you were to say that, if you were to be that kid in the classroom that says that, they'd be like, well, why don't you want to be an astronaut? Or why don't you want to be a teacher like me? Or why don't you want to be a business person? There's still a sense to that you need to want the right things too. You can't completely validate the kid who says they want to be a coat hanger, even though you just told them they can be anything. There's all of these embedded little boundaries within these platitudes, and this character is encountering it. I've encountered it, and I'm glad there's a song about it.
Yeah. And I think what kind of sucks about like that whole process is that you have that moment where it's like, oh, you could be whatever you want to. Like, you set them up for all this potential, but you don't really like provide resources to help them. And I think that's what I think about when I hear the line, like, follow your dreams, the heart don't lie. Oh, that's a good luck charm. Like, but I'm watching it tear out of my arms again. Like, and it comes back to like a lot of hollow words where you kind of just set me down this road because you're like, you can be anything you want to be. And then you kind of just let me go without help. And then now that I'm like looking back and unsure, and you're just like, you got it.
Yeah.
And it just feels a little, like it's a little hollow or like a little like disingenuous. And it comes back to, like, you know, to kind of tie it together. Like, this whole song is just a lot of that feeling that the singer is kind of struggling with while he's, like, talking to someone. And at least how I'm taking it is he's, like, finally kind of just laying this out. And he wasn't even sure if he wanted to let that person know, but he's doing his best not to let it get between me and the listener, or him and the listener.
Yeah. Well, with that in mind, as usual, we listen to these songs and find some questions for each other to ask, see where we're at on certain parts of our journeys. The first question I had for you is, do you remember the first time you had to have a really tough conversation with somebody? You had to kind of sit somebody down like this and be like, hey, I got some shit to say. Like,
I had to, like, just tell, like, not necessarily, like, address the conflict, but something that, like, I've been holding back.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly like that.
Ooh.
I was just gonna say, just to prime you a little bit, I remember I had a friend growing up. It wasn't you. you would remember this if you were part of it. But I had a friend growing up who I was very close with, and especially during the summers, they would, like, call pretty much every day. And this was in the era of the landline. Again, sort of dating ourselves a little bit here, but. They would call
pretty much. That was
not me. No, it was not you. They would call pretty much every day to ask, oh, can Dayton hang out? Can Dayton come and play? We were, you know, probably early elementary school at this point. And it got to the point where my mom's like, this kid's calling every day. You have to tell him he can't. I'm like, why do I have to tell him?
You're the mom. Like, how old were you?
Oh, gosh. I had to be like early. Oh, gosh. At the latest, a preteen, if not younger, like, sure. Maybe like as young as 8 or 9. I feel like at that age,
I feel like at that age, you'd want to be like, but I want to play with them.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like friends and stuff.
Yeah. And I think my mom wanted me to, you know, be at home doing chores certain points. And
sure.
And this kid couldn't fill my days exactly. So I remember having that conversation with him, literally calling him up on my parents' basement landline phone and being like, hey, dude, my mom says that you can't call every day. I can't hang out every day. And I don't know if I had the kind of nuance to qualify it with. We could still hang out, just not this often. I don't think it was like that. I think I literally just told him, like, hey, my mom says you can't call every day. Like, and
oh, jeez.
I have a lot of happy memories of hanging out with this person. But sure. That one, ooh, that kind of marred it a little bit. And nothing against my mother. I'm sure it was annoying, but carrying that on me pretty early was tough. That's like the first really hard conversation I remember trying to initiate and realizing, oh, I have to play my cards. I have to be delicate about this. It's not as easy as walking up to my friends at school. This kid, we didn't go to the same school at the same time.
Okay.
But you know, at your friends at school, you walk up to them and be like, oh, did you see this character is announced for the new Super Smash Brothers game? Like, that kind of stuff. It's easy.
And, like, then you'd be like, I can't hang out with you anymore.
Like, that's such a different interaction. And I hadn't been put in that position before. In retrospect, it was something, you know, maybe I gleaned something from it and was a little bit more of a mediator later in life, or even just a few years later. I've always kind of considered myself kind of a peacekeeper. Maybe it started with conversations like that, but that was the first one for me. But I cut you off. Which one did you have in mind?
Oh, no. I'm trying to think of one that, like, is tough, but nothing where, I feel like this will be a very different side of that type of conversation.
Okay.
Where I remember, actually, I'll start with this one first, just because it'll probably be easier to talk about. But, like, I remember when I, not the same where I'm like, oh, I have to have this conversation. But when I, and this was much more recent, I think this was back in, like, 8 years ago or something, like 2017. So like, yeah, 8 years ago. So more recent, but it's when I was like got my first tattoo. So I was like raised in a very traditional Chinese family, and like tattoos and things and piercings and things like that were like very verboten. Like they were just like some of the worst things you could do. And I remember like as a teenager, I thought it would be cool to get one, but like I hesitated for the longest time just because of those like traditional values. And I remember like when I like finally pulled the trigger and had like the confidence to do it, I knew in like my mind like that this conversation would eventually come up. And this one, like, it's different from yours because like this was like your mom was like, you have to tell this kid you can't play with him. My situation was more like, this conversation is gonna happen now. I just don't know when. And I remember like trying to not put it off, but like just not call attention to it. You know, I'm not like not telling my parents like, oh, I got a tattoo, because at this point I've moved out, I'm an adult, I live on my own. So like we don't like spend time in the same place very often as we did when like we're growing up. And I remember one time I went back home for some reason during the summer one evening. And I think it had been a couple months by this point, and I just totally forgot about it. And I get home, and my mom's like made dinner for me, and it's like 8 p.m. every like, so I'm just eating kind of like on my own at the dinner table. And then she comes and like sits down and like talks. And then as I'm eating, I remember she like sees the tattoo because it's on my wrist. It's like not on a place where it's like hidden. Like it's pretty accessible, which is one of the reasons why I wanted the tattoo there, because it was like something I didn't want to hide. Because again, I think this is actually, I'll circle back to this later, but it's like kind of like another thing about being vulnerable. But I remember my mom seeing that and she was like, what is that? And at that moment, I have like a bowl of rice in my hand, and I just like time stopped for me. I'm like, I guess this is it. This is it. It's like, oh shit. And yeah, they were not too happy for a good while. I think my mom actually like started crying.
Oh, yeah.
Which was like such a juxtaposition because I had told my brother earlier, and like my brother, like we're close now, and like he knew it was gonna be a whole hullabaloo once they found out.
Sure.
And I remember being in my bedroom and my mom facing my mom and like discussing like why I got the tattoo and trying to justify it. And she's like really sad and kind of like in the mix between like yelling and in sadness and disappointment. And meanwhile, behind my mom is my brother looking at me laughing because
Oh,
like he knew this was gonna
jeez,
happen.
yeah.
I mean, it's, and long story short, like in the end, like it was a rough a period of time, but like it's smoothed over, and they're fine with it now. But it was definitely was something that like challenged our family a little bit, or like you know those family traditional values that I grew up with, and kind of just doing a hard pivot like out of those lanes and dealing with the consequences.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that, man. That's I recognize that's a deep familial kind of thing to grapple with. I mean, it's your parents seeing their expectations for you broken in some way. You know, and you know, our generation thinks about tattoos in such a different way. But that's I can totally see where your mom's coming from, and it's from her upbringing and things like that. So no, I appreciate you sharing it. And I think like you said, it's a different kind of tough conversation where you were kind of preparing to have it, but you at that moment you were thrust into it, as opposed to, you know, I had a little bit more prep time, and the character in between me and you initiates the conversation themselves, and nope, you were shoved into the deep end there. So It sounds like it was something that I knew was going to happen. Yeah.
And like going back to like the theme of like kind of just putting it out there, it reminded me of like the where I have my first tattoo is like right on my wrist, because I remember telling myself if I was going to get a tattoo, I didn't want to hide it.
Yeah.
Because then what would be the point?
Yep.
And I think like I always had thought about like a place where I could always see it.
Yeah.
Because I always see, like when people get tattoos on their backs, like it's cool and stuff. And I feel like if I did that, I'd forget about it. And then I would like kind of lose the whole like meaning behind it.
Yeah.
But I was also going through like a big change in my life at that time, which I think helped catalyze me actually like finally, you know, getting a tattoo and doing something like on like for me.
Right.
And to try and like tie it back to the lyrics of Between Me and You, it's kind of something where that line, like following your dreams, but the trail went cold. Like, what do you do then?
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point was when I really started to feel burnout from going to grad school.
Okay.
And growing up, you know, in a traditional Chinese family, you know, the stereotypical joke is like every Asian kid is supposed to become a doctor, you know, for their parents.
Mm.
And I was like a smart kid, so like that's what I did. And I followed my quote-unquote dreams, and I went, you know, after graduating college, I went to grad school, and around, like, the third year was when I got transferred, because my professor moved the lab from one university to another, and that really kind of put a pause on, like, research and everything, and it gave me some time to, like, take a step back and, like, take stock of where I was at, and I was like, oh, man, yeah, I'm, like, really burnt out from just all this like academic rigor, and then I like wanted to do something for me, and I think the tattoo was like the biggest thing I could think of that was something that was very much unexpected from me.
Yeah.
And I think that was, I could probably relate that a little bit to Brandon Flowers' lyric, "There's power in letting go," to at that point in my life, like letting go a little bit, probably not completely at that time, but like letting go a little bit of like this cookie cutter path that I felt like I had to follow from, you know, my parents and my peers and like my superiors of like what I should be doing. And for me, I think grad school was also really like a big part of my life where it could be summed up by that pre-chorus where, Brandon Flowers sings, "Follow your dreams, but the trail went cold. The heart don't lie, but I'm watching it tear out of my arms," where like grad school was fun and I like met a lot of great people and don't regret it, but it was definitely a point in my life where at the end of it, I did all this thing, but I didn't quite get like the finish that I was seeing for people around me.
Sure.
And it was kind of like one of those big walls that were like, oh, I did all these things. I did what I was supposed to. Why don't I get this? And then people just tell you like, oh, just keep trying, man. Keep trying. And I remember like I finished my degree like fall of 2020, like peak lockdown.
Right.
And so job market is not great. And eventually like I found a job, but it took like almost 2 years.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really one that was very similar or what I had expected to get with like a degree that I got. And to me, like that was a very much a mirror, at least for me, of those lyrics of like watching like my dreams tearing out of my arms. But then like kind of thinking back on it now, getting to a point and being comfortable like talking about that, having like that power and letting go, I think has been really therapeutic in a way, where it's like you kind of think about it and kind of think about what is this really all for in the long run.
Hmm.
And And I know that, you know, people talk all about like work-life balance, and this kind of comes up in this song as well, where, you know, one of the lines in the outros is just, these hours I'm working ain't nearly enough, and I've been wondering, what am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think work, especially as we've been talking about like this American culture of the American dream, I think is probably the most common avenue where people could like relate to the song in their own personal way. And I know you had brought it up earlier, so I'm curious to hear kind of your side of how you kind of like dealt with that issue and the themes from this song, because you had said that I think this was a big part of like your working life years prior.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you, I was, you know, quote unquote smart kid in high school. Well, even before that too, I was pretty successful in middle school, and, you know, realizing like, oh, okay, I'm good at test taking. I go back to that a lot. It's a little self-deprecating to say, but I think to a degree it was true. It's like I put quotes around my smart kid title because I was a very good studier and a very good test taker.
You knew how to take a test.
I did, yeah.
Oh man. Just as a quick aside, I remember in grad school toward the later end, we were, some of the grad students, we would hold Mechanism Club, where we would go take like an hour or two when somebody would be responsible for like making up a worksheet where we'd go through like chemical reactions and as a group kind of like solve problems together to study together. And I remember one of my proudest moments was kind of teaching a test taking skill that I learned from high school.
Okay.
I don't know if you, did you ever have Mrs. Gehrink as a science teacher?
I did. Shout out to Colleen Gehrink.
Lovely lady. Shout out to Colleen Gehrink. Lovely lady. Great horticulturist, but, you know, like not a great science teacher when it came to things outside of like agriculture and horticulture.
Sure.
But she gave me one of the best pieces of advice for taking a test, and that was use the test to take the test.
Yeah.
And it was something that blew the minds of my grad school colleagues, grad school colleagues, where like, you just if you're stuck on a problem, look ahead, because a lot of times when you have very complex problems, they're like done in steps, and if you don't get like the answer to a certain problem, if you look down the line, they might use that as like, okay, back in question two, you should have gotten this. Now we're going to move on from this chemical. Cool. And what do you react with that to get to this? And if you just kind of do a little detective work,
we'll reverse on the test as a whole,
yeah, well, you'll reverse engineer the answer. And it actually has like come in handy way more often than it should, because I think people aren't necessarily great at test writing, or it's just like a common mistake that I feel I see all the time that has benefited me a lot, knowing that key tenet of use the test to take the test. And it was just something I was very proud of that I got to teach my grad school colleagues.
Absolutely. No, there were little tricks of the trade like that, right? Where I feel like made me successful at that age. I know with multiple choice tests, my dad taught me, he's like, okay, if you have an A, B, C, D, there's most likely going to be two answers that are more wrong than the other two. Then there's going to be another answer that's almost right, but there's going to be something wrong with it. And then there's going to be the right answer. And that holds true also a weird amount of time. So I had all of these little skills that I had accumulated. I did quite well in high school. You know, it's even, if I feel like awkward and apprehensive even saying it now, because but I gotta own it, you know. And mm-hmm. It led me to college on some pretty high stakes scholarships, and I put a lot of pressure on myself to maintain a 4.0 as much as I could. And I originally went to school for architectural studies, I don't regret it in the least. Number one, because I met my wife that way. She's still in that field and she's much more successful at it than I ever was or ever could have been. So I'm glad I still get to kind of live vicariously through her. But I started off in that field and I quickly realized, oh, okay, I can do these things, but I need to put in four times the work as everybody else. And when it comes to architectural kind of the design studies that I was doing, these weren't tests. These were drawings, these were conceptualizations, these were explorations of space, all of the fancy kind of terminology that you can use in the academic world of architectural studies. And my sophomore year, I ended up getting like a B plus in something. Oh, God forbid. And I did end up shifting gears, but I didn't shift to something that I felt like, oh, here's what I can get A's in. It's like, okay, what can I kind of feel excited about failing at? And I ended up pursuing a degree in marketing, sort of as a nice kind of fail safe. That's the kind of work I'm in now. But I do get to combine it with my other degree, and that's in creative writing. I kind of contradict this message of the song here a little bit in that I did kind of follow my heart here and it did lead me somewhere, but it also exposed me to the vulnerabilities of, hey, the world isn't graded and isn't going to reward you with 100% gold stars all the time, and you have to become comfortable with not just a lack of reward, but sometimes some pretty harsh criticism. So when it comes to my work, I've always held myself at a very, very high standard still, and it's taken me, oh boy, now 3+ years in therapy for me to help myself become comfortable with the sort of lack of structure in work life, and to leave behind, find that power in letting go of those both the successes and the failures of the day. I try not to define myself by my work. I've been in some jobs where, because I felt like I needed to be a certain thing at work, it broke me. I was just far too different a person at work than I was at home. And I think it's okay to compartmentalize to a degree. I think that's a healthy coping mechanism to a certain level. But when you can't recognize that person at the desk against the person that you are the other 16 hours of the day, that's where a lot of trouble can start and where I struggled a lot for a long time. I'm in a really healthy place now, I like to think. And a big part of that is I let a little bit more of myself, the person who I am when I wake up in the morning, when I go to bed, I let that person bleed a little bit more into my work. And I let some of my coworkers see that guy. And then there's a still a good amount, though, that I leave at my desk. There's like the guy who didn't quite nail that ad copy right from the first bat. That's fine. He can stay there. He's okay. He's going to be fine the next day. That's not something I need to bring home. That's not something I need to ingrain into this other 16 hours of Dayton. This song has always spoke to me in my work challenges because I feel like I constantly need to be working and improving and making and kind of protecting that Dayton at the desk. But he's okay. He's going to be all right. It's breaking apart those roles, being comfortable with those both sides of, the your I haven't watched Severance. I know you've watched part of Severance at least, but
Oh,
I know
yeah,
there's
I
the
have.
innies and the outies. You have to be comfortable with both of them succeeding and failing and letting them interact. I barely know the conceit of the show, but I understand that there's a very strong line in between those roles. And I think it's okay for that barrier to be permeable. I think it needs to be. But at the same time, you have to have control over that airlock between the two. So I don't know. It's something I continue to navigate, and something, you know, next week, if I have a big project land on my desk, it might stress me out. It might put a little bit more strain on the 16-hour Dayton, but it's something I'm more and more aware of because of songs like this.
I think it'd be weirdly inhuman if you could completely compartmentalize like the two away. Because I think at the end of the day, it's still you in and outside of your work. And I think your story reminded me of like a line that we didn't really talk about yet in the song, where it talks about these hours I'm working ain't nearly enough. And sometimes it's like a bullet came and blasted me right out of the blue. And it sounds like that B plus really kind of shocked you a little bit to your system to kind of recalibrate and kind of think about what the right next step for you was.
And I'm glad you brought that up again too, because I don't want to send anybody home with a lesson where it's like, oh, if you fail, you got to pivot. And it just to sort of put a button on that, in my studies of creative writing, I remember explicitly like one story I was just like, let me just try something. Or like, you know, we were writing short stories, and I remember this one, I was like, okay, this is weird, but let me just try it. It didn't really work. My professor didn't really like it. But I just moved on. Like I was much more comfortable with failure in that space than I was in the architectural space, which is, it goes back to another adage that's kind of stuck with me about work life, in that the saying goes, I don't even remember where I heard it, but it goes, everybody eats shit at your job. You just need to find your favorite flavor. I think you have to, there's almost an Aaron Hansenism that's kind of like this too, where he's like, sometimes you have to wake up in the morning and ask yourself, what am I willing to put up with today? I think there's a lot of truth to that. Obviously, Aaron from the Game Grumps uses it in a humorous context, but I think there's something to be said about that, where you can't expect yourself to shelter yourself from inconveniences, from troubles, from crises even. You have to figure out which crises you're best at navigating. What kind of failure are you comfortable with, right?
Yeah, and I think also, like, when you encounter like a specific type of failure for like the first time in your life, to be able to like rein it back in. I think it's natural to like feel shook, you know, when something new like that happens. Like you said, you got a B plus. I assume like for the first time, you're like, oh man, the world is so different now. Mm-hmm. But like to pivot. Or not necessarily pivot, but just like kind of try to get back to like a level head and like think about like, well, what does that actually mean?
Right.
Does it mean that like I should pivot, or does it mean like, am I just need to rework some things to like study harder, and like, or did something happen? Like, to just kind of analyze it a little bit after the fact, and not let it get too crazy, to like rein it back in and not let it get out of control.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I think another like underlying kind of message in this like song is like, you're going through a lot of like rough times and rough things in life, and things are going to bleed over because you're like this one being, and you have all these experiences sharing this one being. And so that's going to bleed a little bit into different areas. But you just gotta try your best to buffer it against the like important things that you want to hold on to. In this case, in the song, like trying not to let it bleed in too much of this relationship you have with this person that you're singing to in the song, but you know, acknowledging that it, you know, these things are there, but you're trying to not let it, you know, get out of hand or dictate like your entire life.
Right. Exactly. It's that I keep going back to, it's like, what failure are you comfortable with? What's going to allow you to still be the best person you can be? What failure isn't going to derail you? Because you will find failure. But what kind of failure can you almost like glean the most from? What can you find the most value in? And for me, it's writing. It's trying to explore language, playing around with it, sometimes failing, but then digging deeper and finding a message that I'm really trying to convey. I'm very glad that I went down that path, and it has led me to some dead ends. I really felt stuck in my writing once in a while. The trail has gone cold every once in a while, but ultimately I keep kind of finding my way back. I don't know if it's, I would call it following my heart. It really is, you know, and like most things in life. And I don't know if I would really call it like following my heart, but it's like more about allowing things in, right? You know, kind of sometimes like shutting my heart up and being like, no, just listen to what's going on around you. Think about the people who are inspiring you. Think about the world that you live in. Think about the environments. Think about the noises, the sensory things, and think about the gratitude that you have for these tiny things and the big things too. And that usually leads me back to a place of inspiration of sorts. So I've become more and more comfortable being in that writer's block environment and then getting out of it much more than I was in the architect's block kind of space. I don't even know if I have, obviously I can't call myself an architect or anything like that, but I don't even know if I was in a space of, oh, I'm in the right area, I'm just stuck in this one bit. I don't even know if I was in the same ballpark, man. So it's good to be closer to what I think comes most naturally to me.
Yeah. And I think like the listen to your heart line, at least in this song, isn't something that like the singer is like strongly in the camp of.
Right.
It sounds like it's like a piece of advice that he got from other people. And even he's like, I don't think this is working. Like, I don't think that's good advice
right
for the current situation.
Yeah.
But also a B+ sophomore year in college, it took that long.
So in middle school, I think I had some things that were, you know, less than A's, but all high school, that was a clean bill.
Wow.
And then freshman year of college was all clean. And then, sophomore year was that first B+. So yeah, I worked my tail off a lot. Like I said, good test taker. I was really good at studying, but then as soon as those ceased to be the skill set, a new game on the table. So
yeah, and I feel like I also got lower grades like in grade school, but those don't actually mean anything,
right?
I think I got a B in high school, either fresh. It was a B in psychology, which was a summer school class that I took at Northwestern University.
Ooh.
As like a sophomore or freshman in like summer school. So I got it earlier on, but like I feel like I was like kind of put into like a tougher like track, I guess. Not to like brag or anything, but like I feel like I got that like kind of knocked down a little earlier. And so
how long were you a grade ahead of everybody else?
I wasn't really a grade ahead of it was just in math. And that started grade 4.
Well,
cuz I remember when I was in 4th grade, my mom talked to the teachers and basically I had to sit and take all the math tests that they were going to give the 4th graders that year.
Oh.
Like just back to back to back to back. And I think I got it, like I got a passing grade on all of them, so that was when they bumped me up to like 5th grade math when I was in 4th grade.
Okay.
Which was kind of an isolating experience that we can talk about with another song later down the road.
For but sure.
It as like a little teaser. I remember during math time, you're like, all right, it's time for math, because it's still grade school, right, where the teacher's teaching all the subjects across the whole day. It's not like a teacher per subject. And when we transitioned to the math section, it's like, all right, take out your math books. Jordan, you just keep working on that workbook that you got, because I was the only one, like, at that point, I just, like, become on my own independent trail, and I just had to do the workbook on my own while everybody else was, like, learning together.
Wow.
But yes, yeah, so, I mean, that started early. But, like, the grades, like I said, first B I got, like, I think must have been, like, summer either before or after freshman year of high school. And it was, like, in psychology, because I thought it was interesting. And it was interesting, and I did learn a lot. But it was also, like, I felt I was out of my depth.
Right.
Because it wasn't, like, as logical and, you know, analytical as math.
Right.
And, you know, I got the B, and I'm like, looking back, it was warranted. And even at that time, I knew, like, yeah, like, I wasn't as good as some of the other people in the class.
But even then, like, you just said something there that I think I missed out on. You were just like, oh, I took psychology because it was interesting. I think up until that moment when I made that pivot into my business and English degrees, I was doing what I thought I was supposed to do. It's like, oh, okay, I'm good at school, so I will do the things that people who are good at school do. And it's like, no, I should have just gone for something that I was interested in from the get-go. Not that I wasn't interested in architecture and things like that, but I was like, oh, okay, I'm kind of, I need to, I can't do something simple. I have to go for something that kind of has some prestige to it. I don't know. I
totally get it. Because I would say, like, I feel like a big part of me going to grad school was kind of on the same lines, where it's like, oh, I'm good at school, I'll just keep doing this.
Keep doing school.
It seems like the most natural. Yeah, it seemed the most natural and, like, path of least effort at the time. And it wasn't until, like, later being like, well, is this really the best decision? I don't know, but it happened. And we can just kind of work and start to, like, let go of, like, those preconceived expectations and things like that.
Absolutely. Well, I think on that note, I do want to ask one more question. I think it'll be a good way to button up this conversation here.
Yeah.
There's a lot I didn't get to talk about, but I think what I love about how we're approaching this show is there's questions that we can kind of find in certain types of songs. These very poppy, sometimes even vague, broad songs can point us in the direction of a certain way that we're feeling. So yeah, I definitely want to talk about at some point the ways that you might have felt isolated growing up and in being pushed into some of those higher caliber areas. But at any rate, I do want to talk a little bit about our childhood here before we go. And that's, what did you want to be when you grew up? And
a doctor.
You did want to be a doctor.
No, I mean, because my parents told me to. Well, I think as a kid, my parents kind of laid that on pretty thick. And my dad even brings it up occasionally, where I think as a kid, I had this alter ego, Dr. Malosky or something. It's just like,
it's like a Polish last name.
Who I would be. I know. It was, I forgot exactly. It was something like that. Dr. Malosky. And, like, that's who I was going to be when I grow up, a doctor. And my dad brings it up, like, occasionally still to this day, like, little Jordan being Dr. Malosky. And my, like, retort back now is like, well, I'm a kind of doctor.
Yeah.
Not that doctor, but I'm a kind of doctor.
You have a PhD.
Not a medical one. That's what the D stands for.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a good question, because not only I think have I thought about this a little bit kind of with relative frequency, but it was something that I wasn't actually sure as a kid besides the just nebulous ideal of a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
When, like, up until maybe middle school. And then in middle school, I think I just really loved math, and I just thought that was going to be my future. But then I did a hard pivot, like, senior year of high school. Because at that point, senior year of high school, I took, like, 3 college-level math classes at the nearby community college in Wausau. And so, like, everybody, even me at that point, is like, oh, this kid's just going to be a math whiz. He's going to go into math in college. It's a shoo-in. And I even thought that, too. But I think at the time, when I was a senior, I was thinking that, like, math is fun, but I didn't really know what kind of careers came out of math. I mean, I heard of, like, actuaries and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't actually know what that meant at the time. And it just sounded like actuaries just take tests and get paid a lot.
Sure.
Because they do, like, a lot of insurance calculations and stuff. But, like, when you become an actuary, I think there's a long process after college where, like, you basically study for a lot of tests to get, like, certifications and become qualified. And I think all the while, like, you are technically employed by, like, insurance companies. So, like, you're beginning paid to study and take tests.
Okay.
And I'm like, that doesn't seem very useful.
Ooh.
And that was when I, like, did the pivot to chemistry, because I really liked chemistry class in high school, even though our chemistry teacher kind of sucked. So, like, I fell in love with the subject despite the teacher. And thought, like, okay, I'll go pursue this. And I think when I got accepted to UC Berkeley on, like, a throwaway application, I was like, you know what, I'm going to do something new that my brother didn't do and kind of go off my own path. And that was a school that's known for having a really good chemistry department. And so, okay. Like, you know, I'm going to try and be a chemist. And then even then, like, there was still some doubts about what kind of chemist, because interestingly enough, there was a specific college of chemistry at UC Berkeley that only had 3 majors, and it was chemistry, chemical biology, and chemical engineering. And unlike the other colleges, when you got there, like, day one, you had to declare a major. You couldn't be undeclared.
Okay.
But you could switch it, because I switched twice within my freshman year because I didn't actually, like, know. Like, I picked chemical biology, and then I'm like, I just kind of picked that off the cuff. Like, maybe I just want to do, like, more broadly chemistry, because then I can, like, figure it out later. And then toward the end of my first year, I'm like, no, I actually kind of do, like, chemical biology. Kind of switch back. So that was, like, my childhood career aspirations in a nutshell, where it was, like, very much not idealistic. It was more, like, pragmatic, because, like, thinking back, should I have stayed in math? I don't know, but it was definitely something that I really liked, and it was and what I do now, like, in the field of chemistry, I don't think that was ever, like, in my radar until, like, high school.
Okay.
When people ask, like, oh, what do you want to do? I did, like, really like science, and I think maybe there was a little bit of that when I was, like, preteen.
Okay.
Where I wanted to be a scientist, not, like, necessarily, like, a mathematician, even though I was just really interested in mathematics even then. I just had, like, this weird disconnect between what I liked to do and what I thought was useful.
Yeah. That's interesting, though, I think.
Yeah.
What is useful is such an interesting question for like a high schooler to ask. I think that's great. I love that you had that kind of foresight. I don't know, that feels very you. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you sharing that. That's great. As far as myself, yeah, you know, the easy answer is as a kid, I wanted to write. I think,
okay,
what I struggled with as a kid is I had no idea what to write. And even as I got mm-hmm. into my creative writing program at UW-Milwaukee, I still really struggled with what I wanted to write. You know, so much of You know, there's the adage, oh, write what you know. I have a pretty, I love my life, but it's pretty milquetoast. You know, I think,
I wouldn't say that.
well, thank you. I appreciate that. I picked up some interesting hobbies in the past couple of years. That's for sure. And I have lots of interesting people around me. But as far as what Dayton knows, what's in Dayton's head, yeah, you know, doesn't exactly make for
I
the
mean, I
greatest
love milk,
storytelling.
I love toast, so it's fine.
You know what? I'll write you a short story about a wonderful breakfast
I can't wait.
then. I think what I've really found myself gravitating towards over the past couple of years, and what I found in college, was first poetry. If you would have told grade school Dayton that the kind of writer he would want to become 10, 15 years from that point was a poet, he would have been very confused. And then now, recently, I've taken to reading a lot of horror fiction, and I've been writing some in my free time. And the commonality between those two is that, like, both poetry and horror kind of amplify emotions to a point where, like, everything's big. Everything can be big, everything can be exciting or frightening. And everything's kind of a threat, right? Like it's a both in the world of poetry and in the world of horror, everything you're feeling is kind of valid because it's blown up to this heightened reality. And that's such a fun space to play in because these stories that I'm writing right now, they are things I know because they're speaking to fears that I have, but they're exaggerated. They're putting characters in sort of blown up versions of things that I've encountered, and making their reality the reality of what I felt, even though it wasn't legitimately what I was experiencing. You know, I wasn't running into monsters that were the manifestation of social anxiety, but these characters are, and they're kind of fulfilling what I felt. So, same thing with poetry, where it was like it allowed me to play with the words and the things and the thoughts that were rushing in my head when I was feeling these things. And even though they weren't the reality of what I was experiencing, they were what I felt. So I think I really am destined to write in those spaces. And if I found a neat way to explain that to young Dayton, I think he'd understand. But as far as that kid knew, he just wanted to be a writer. He wanted to be a name on the front cover of a book, even though he didn't know what he wanted to write. So it's interesting to find that kind of path within that original inspiration. That kid also really wanted to animate or do something with video games, but as we've talked about with my architecture experience, I am not exactly the best guy for visual representation.
Now I'm actually curious to see like you drawing and seeing how that like looks.
Oh, I've tried, believe me.
I'm sure it's fine. I mean like it is I will say like it's interesting, you know, as someone from the other side where as a kid like it seemed like you had that like North Star of like a direction you wanted to go. Not exactly necessarily a full specific destination, but like having that guide of wanting to be a writer that whole time.
Yeah, I think it, like I mentioned, it did lead me down to some dead ends. The trail went cold, but it was all about being comfortable with being uncomfortable in those spaces and understanding, hey, there's something here. I just got to keep exploring for a while until I feel some sort of warmth, until I get back on the scent kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I had lots of dreams when I was a kid, but writer was the one that kind of stuck out and one that I found myself going back to. And here we are. Hopefully I'll get something published someday.
I'm sure it'll be just around the corner.
Yeah, I hope
And
so.
even like not, you probably want to wait until you get something that like you feel good about publishing.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the stories I'm trying to tell right now, I think, are getting pretty close. So don't want to make any promises, but hopefully some Even some listeners here today will be able to read some of the things I'm writing now. So
awesome, awesome. Yeah, with that, I think that's a good little bookend for this track, Between Me and You by Brandon Flowers. Again, if you made it to the end of this episode, I'd just like to say thank you for sticking with us. And if you have any comments or stories that you'd like to tell based off of this song, you can always feel free to reach out at marathonmixtapespodcast@gmail.com. Any other final words, Dayton?
Just appreciate everything that you shared today, man. This was some good stuff. I know we're tackling some heavy topics here with some of these songs. There are some cheerier ones down the road, I will promise to our listeners. we're getting some of the heavy hitters out of the way, but there are some cheerier stories I think we can tell down the road. But for now, I think some of these tougher topics are a great way for us to remind each other why we're friends and the kind of connections that we made, and to share with the listeners kind of the background and foundation that we've had in our separate journeys, and why we continue to rely on each other, and why we've decided to start a podcast together.
You know, life's all about the ups and downs, and there's a lot we can't predict, but you know, just can't let it get between me and you.
That's right, Jordan.
All right, well, we'll hopefully see you in the next track.
Yep.
Until then, we'll see you later. Thanks, Dayton.
See you, everybody. See you, Jordan.